So, Ducker, I hear that you had the unique pleasure of taking your children to Disneyland Paris. Give us the synopsis.
I mean, you know, happiness, Ryan, right? Happiness, memories, yeah. Financial fleecing is another term that comes to me at every available corner. Queuing for rides where queues just never end. Like they get you in the line, in the queue, you're outside, then you go around the corner, then there's another queue, then you snake for another half an hour, and then you're inside, and then they let you come up for air and they get you outside again. It's just queuing, you know, and just, yeah, it's Disneyland. You know what you're signing up for, brother. You know what you're signing up for.
So all good times then, right?
So all good times and lots of memories. Yeah. Yeah. It's Disneyland, man. It's a rite of passage. You've got to do it.
Welcome to Seven Figure Small, the podcast that adds to your playbook of strategies and tactics to attract an audience and build your business, all without investors or employees. I'm your host, serial digital entrepreneur Brian Clark. Thanks for joining us. Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome to Seven Figure Small with my very special British guest, my buddy Chris Ducker. Chris, other than Disneyland Paris, things are good? Do we have anything else we want to complain about? If only they would have heard the real story that you shared with me before we went live.
Yes, this is true. No, I've got nothing else to complain about. You know what? I'm actually feeling pretty good. I'm bang smack at the end of an 8-week sabbatical. I've got about a week and a half left. And we've done things a little bit different this year. We've sort of done a week away and then we've come home for a week. And then we've done another week away. So we've done London. We've done Paris. We're about to do Suffolk, England, about an hour and a half from where we are. Beautiful little nature retreat wilderness thing. And I did Malta as well. Went over and saw Matt Kimberly in Malta.
Oh, yeah. Few days as well. That scoundrel.
The scoundrel, indeed. Yes, the troublemaker of all troublemakers. But yeah, it's been a good summer. It's been a good summer. After what was, you know, a bit of a tough start to the year, I think, for a lot of people. We haven't had any major issues business-wise, but we have gone through a lot of changes and pivots in the last couple of years. So it was nice to be able to hit the pause button properly. 8 weeks off, genuinely off. I think I had like 4 calls on the calendar that I didn't cancel. I'm actually fired up. I'm looking forward to getting back to work in a couple of weeks from now.
Yeah, I won't share with you the disruptions that I've experienced in this year. The audience has heard them, but I'll spare you. But I didn't realize the last couple times I hit you up to get on the show that you were actually on sabbatical. So I would hit you up and he's like, oh, bad timing, mate. I'm doing this. And then, oh, I can't do it. I'm off to Disneyland. And you said, I guess we've just got bad timing. And I said, no, I think you've got a lack of work ethic. I didn't realize you were on sabbatical when I made that joke, but you did laugh. So
I did laugh and it was a great joke. But yeah, I kind of feel like, if I'm to be really honest, dude, like I feel like I've worked way less this year, like 2022, in terms of like man hours invested day to day. I don't think I've worked anywhere near as much as I did in 2021. I feel like I've earned I've earned the time off this year. So, yeah, I mean, if I had to put a pin in it, I'd say we probably averaged maybe 15, 20 hours a week.
Nice.
This year. And I feel pretty good for it. And actually, I want to continue it going into 2023 as well. So, we're going to look at what that looks like from a team standpoint. But yeah, I kind of want to get to the point where I'm just kind of working, you know, a few hours each day, Monday to Thursday. As you know, I've not worked a Friday for probably 8-9 years or whatever it is. But it's been fun.
Yeah, I know that what we've talked about in the past, we see how things are changing. We're seeing how what we're trying to do with our businesses might need to change, how our own, you know, personal mission statements may be changing. And you and I chatted about that when we caught up. It's been a while now, but what are some of the things you're seeing overall that I think everyone should be paying attention to? And then maybe we can go into how that informed the decisions you made in your own business and what Chris wants to do, which sounds like have a great business, but not kill yourself over it, which sounds pretty totally. Good to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is why I love what you do, the focus here on this particular show as well. You can run and operate and scale a great business without running yourself into the ground and experiencing burnout. Like, you can do it. You and I have both done it, and we continue to do it. We know many people that have done it as well. And for me, I think the big change for me is that I have actually figured out, I've just turned 49. I'm going to be 50 next year. I have actually figured out over the last 6 months or so that I actually don't owe anything to anyone anymore, period. Like, I've earned my stripes. I've employed thousands and thousands of people in my career. I've built a number of multi-7-figure revenue businesses. I have coached and mentored hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And I've created thousands of pieces of online content, just like yourself. I don't want to say I'm becoming a slightly like a bit of a grumpy old man, but I think I'm getting to the point where I realize that actually I don't owe anyone anything. And therefore, with that being the case, I'm going to do everything now on my own terms. And I mean everything. And so, you know, we've killed products, we've shelved events, we've you know, made a number of different changes team-wise. People have moved on. A couple of people have been hired, you know, and it's all because I've gotten to the point where I just want to do it my own way now, you know, plain and simple. I don't want to be led. Not that I've always been a leader, but I feel like sometimes we are led by other people or the constraints that we put upon ourselves because of what we think other people might think or see when they look at us and what we're doing. And I'm kind of just beyond that now. I'm totally beyond that now. And the other things like, oh, you've got to be running Facebook ads. Okay, well, I didn't run Facebook ads for the longest time. And then I started doing it. It kind of worked, but it never truly, honestly worked the way I wanted it to. So now I just don't run any Facebook ads, you know? It's little things like that. I just feel like I'm getting to the point where it's going to be on me now, you know? And
yeah,
you got to follow suit or you can jump off the ride, you know? Does that sound arrogant? I mean, I guess it probably does a little bit.
But, no. You know. So my attitude coming out of my own sabbatical, which it's been a few years now.
But how long did you take off again? You took like 2-3 years off or something, didn't you?
It only seems like that.
It totally felt like you went off the, like you just disappeared.
I would
like
say a solid year, even though we only traveled for 7 months.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a solid year before we started Unemployable as a for-profit thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it still took me a minute, you know, like it took me a minute to find out, why am I doing this? You know, because I'll tell people, I didn't want to retire. What the hell would I do with myself? Okay, yep. That's true, but that's not enough of a reason. So I guess I don't think you sound arrogant because I feel the same way, but here's my way of expressing it. I'm committed to the people I want to serve, but if those people don't want to accept the way I'm going to serve them, then they are not a good fit for me, and that's okay. And I'm tripling down on that though, because you can't be, I almost feel sometimes you can put yourself in a position where you're back on your heels a bit. You're apologetic about doing a promo or selling a product that you put your your heart and soul into. If you don't want it, if you don't want the emails, you should unsubscribe and go away.
Yeah.
You know? 100%.
Because I had a conversation with a client just no more than maybe 2 days ago. And he was saying to me that, like, you know, I feel like I'm emailing my list too much. And I said, well, how often are you emailing them? He said, I'm doing it like 4 times a week right now. I said, well, what are you sending them? And it was like, good stuff, like value, like genuine value. Like, it's not fluff, Chris. Like, right. I'm doing what you tell me to do. I'm showing up. I'm serving. Are you pitching as well? Yes, I'm pitching. Are you qualifying people for products while they click on certain links in the emails? Yes, I am. Are they going into sales funnels and showing up to webinars and buying your products and services as and when they're called upon to do so? Yes, they are. So why are you feeling so bad about sending 4 emails a week?
Yeah, that's kind of an odd response. I mean, people look at the wrong metrics. Are you making sales in line with your business objectives? Then things are going. Do you have people who are happy with your with what you're doing? Are they giving you testimonials for your products and services?
Exactly.
But it's human nature. I think we are wired to focus on the negative more than the positive, and you almost have to trick yourself into realizing you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And the people who don't like it, you know, I won't say anything ugly about them. I just don't care. You know, you got
to
go.
And here's the thing. It's the way to look at it is it's just not a fit. It's just not a fit. I know what I can do. I know what my skill set is. I know how I can impact other people's lives. If that's going to benefit in you in some way and you want to invest to spend some time with me so I can help you do that, let's go, baby. Let's go. It's on. But if you feel like I'm not worth it or I'm too expensive, then... clearly there's no fit there.
Right.
You know? There's no fit. You should charge what you feel you're worth. You should show up in your zone of genius. And without a shadow of a doubt, you should work with the people that you know you can have the most amount of impact with. And if in some way, shape or form, even further down the line, that starts to crack slightly and starts to kind of slip away, at that point, you also need to have a conversation. What's changed? Why is this not working? Am I doing something wrong? Are you not picking up what I'm putting down anymore? And, you know, this year I've let 4 of my high-end coaching clients go, and I've turned away probably 3 times that amount. People who were qualified, people who could afford it, people who I know I could help, but I knew that they wouldn't bring to our current group the right kind of vibe to continue to grow the group in the right way. So I could, you know, I've turned away tens of thousands of dollars in potential business because I'm more interested now in developing something for the next 3, 4, 5 years rather than just thinking of like a 12-month commitment. You know what I mean?
You know what the hardest thing in the world is? Trying to convince someone who's not you or I, who've been doing this for a minute, someone newer to the game, that's the same mindset they should have right from the beginning. But I know I didn't. I don't know if you were always Mr. Confident Chris Ducker. How do you convince someone from the beginning not to be arrogant, but to not necessarily and not to ignore obvious signals from the marketplace, but to a certain degree have a non-compromising attitude that, yes, I will adapt by what the market and the audience is telling me, but other than that, this is it. This is the deal. This is who I am. This is what I'm worth. You know, it's not easy.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And no, I've not been super confident. And I think the confident thing, I think a lot of people are struggling with that right now. I think the last couple of years have put a lot of people who would be seen as relatively confident individuals. It's put them back a bit because they haven't had the interaction. They haven't had the dopamine hits from the applauses and the high fives and stuff like that that they would have done if they were going to events and being part of things and things like that. But no, I've not always been like super duper cocky and confident. And I think my cockiness level actually has just dropped
Yeah.
Quite substantially. I used to be a cocky SOB.
I literally used to be super more arrogant than I am now because I've gotten old enough to go, boy, you don't know shit. In the grand scheme of things. Right. Yeah. Well, I'm always going to be grumpy. I mean, that's kind of my trademark. But
I think what's happened is as my cockiness level has dropped, my self-awareness level has gone up. And
The more self-aware you become, the less arrogant you can be if you're doing it correctly.
But you can still be really sure of yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
And you should be sure of yourself. In fact, if anything, you should become more sure of yourself when you're more self-aware, right? And I feel like that's kind of the mode, the era that I'm in currently right now.
I was just answering this question for someone else earlier today, and they're asking about, do you ever have doubts? You haven't had a product fail in 16 years. And I'm like, I have tons of doubts, but I apply that strategically to my ideas. I try to tear my ideas down so that bad ideas don't get out the door. It's not that I don't have bad ideas. They just get killed.
You just don't let anybody know about them. Yeah.
I have the opposite of confirmation bias. I want to find reasons why it's not going to work. The audience isn't going to like it. It's not right for them. I'm just being a dumbass. And that process is brutal, but I love it because if something passes that gauntlet, then it's not going to fail. It may not be as much of a home run as you want, but it's not going to fail because you've put it through the test anyway. Yeah.
You validated it is what you've done. I mean, it's what all of us.
But you got other people have this happy talk approach where you can do it and it's a great idea. And I'm like, no, spin that around. You know, if it can survive critical, attack, then it probably is a good idea.
Yeah, agreed. 100%. And I feel like that yes man. You see that movie? What's that movie with Jim Carrey where he can't tell a lie? Oh, liar, liar! Right? Yeah. Where he can't tell a lie. Like he's got to tell everybody exactly how he's feeling. Like we should be more like that. Like I think the whole yes man thing, particularly when you're mentoring or advising people, coaching people, they come to you with something. There was a client of mine maybe a month ago came to me and said, "I've got this program. It's $6,000." I charge $6,000 up front. It's over a 90-day period, but now I'm thinking that I'm going to charge $500 a month and make it over a year. Why? Why are you going to do it? Well, it's going to be easier to sell. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it really going to be easier to sell? What's going to happen is you're going to get a ton of people drop off because they're going to be seeing $500 leave the bank account every month. 4, 5, 6, 7 months in, you're going to get drop off like you wouldn't believe it. Secondly, the wrong type of people are going to come into that. The wrong type of people are going to come into that because they're not dropping $6,000 down all at once. They're dropping $500 down to get started. And thirdly, most importantly, now you're taking what would have been 90 days of your time and you're stretching it out over an entire 12-month period. That's time where you could be spending time either just doing absolutely nothing or double downing on stuff that's working that's more, a better revenue model or has something attached to it for growth in the future or whatever it might be. She wanted me to approve. She was looking for my approval to go ahead and say, yeah, that's a great idea. Go for it. But I didn't. I put it down and I said, no, that's not a good idea. You need to stick with what you've done and what you continue to do. And I'm happy to say she followed my advice.
Yeah. Yeah. With my business partners, they know my process of tearing things down and to the point I'm sure of it. So they tend to agree with me, even though I say, I don't want you to agree with me. The only time that there's a conflict is when they haven't thought it through and I have, but I've gotten much more patient about that. But I've had some ideas or some conceptions where I've talked to people like you and Chris Lemma and Brian Dice. And these are my buddies, but they won't, including you, will not tell me, yeah, Brian, good thinking. You know, they'll be like, have you thought of this? Because that was stupid. I appreciate that.
I'm pretty sure
that,
I might have said that at some point, actually.
And well, usually it's around pricing. I have a problem with pricing, and a lot of
people do. Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. I grew up poor. I don't know. Well, you want to get into a sociology experiment about it, but, you know.
Tell me about that.
People, how did that make you feel?
Yeah.
No, I think people have issues with money and value, and it's easier to devalue what you do when it's your expertise and knowledge, you know, curse of knowledge type stuff. Oh, everyone knows this. No, they don't.
No,
and especially the ability to provide that expertise combined with unvarnished feedback. So they're looking for validation and you go, no, that's worth, how much is that worth when you think about how that could have turned out for that person poorly? If you had just said, yeah, that's a great idea, go do it. And it turns out it was the wrong answer, right? But yeah, no, I think there's a very important need for that. And it doesn't have to be some guru that you're starstruck with. I think that gets in the way. Although, you know, people kind of worship at the altar of Chris Ducker a bit, I think. Probably because you do that awesome James Brown impression. Like, when I went to your live event, you jumped on stage and were singing James Brown songs. I'm like, okay, that's not fair. I can't do that. You know, how am I going to? I had to give up my guru stripes right there. I'm just like, I can't get on stage.
Yeah, I mean, I also feel like, you see, but, okay, let's break that down. That's interesting. So you say the whole James Brown thing, the singing on stage. Yeah. The fact is, I was front man for a soul and blues band for like 8 years.
Yeah, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I can sing and I can play the blues harp and I can, you know, hell, get enough scotch in me and I'll do a little boogie as well, right? Like, let's go. But here's the thing, you see, that's part of me. Like, that's part of my DNA, my makeup, right? Just as is being a lifelong fan of Bruce Lee. Like, Bruce Lee's my hero, right? Mm-hmm. Just like being a fan of incredible single malt and amazing small batch bourbon, right? Like, when you talk about these things, it becomes part of your DNA and you connect with people in different ways for different reasons. I've had people come up to me and say, oh, you know, I love your Instagram reels on bonsai, because I'm a bonsai guy, right, as well. So like, they connect with me because of bonsai, but they also happen to be a business owner. So maybe I can work with them that way as well. And there'll be other people. There was a dude that was following me for the longest time. And he was an ex-soul DJ from like Tennessee or something, right? And he used to spin the records. And I used to just like his stuff on Instagram. And every now and then I would comment about a record or a bass player or a sax player or whatever it was, right? And he would think, hang on, Chris is like a music dude. Like he knows who these people are. And then one day I posted a photo on my story of myself and Bruce Conti, who was one of the guitarists from the OG Tower of Power, right, back in the day. And we were jamming with each other. And he replied back and he was like, holy crap, like, you know, Bruce Conti, like, well, what's going on here? And we went back and forth. And before that was happening, the dude's dropping $2,500 on a coaching program.
Oh, wow.
Right. So we connected over one thing, but that led to other things. And that's why I think that although a lot of people are pulling back on quote unquote sharing their personal lives online, I think it's actually pretty wise to do it in the right way as and when you feel comfortable doing it, right? And if I want to, you know, if I want to do that, then I'll do it. If I don't, then I won't. You know, it's that simple.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because we've been kind of harping on this a lot, like, you know, putting yourself into your marketing as opposed to, oh, I don't want to reveal too much because someone may not like that. Who cares if they don't like it, right? Because you care about this goes full circle to what we opened with, which is, no, not everyone's going to think you're great. That's impossible. No, you know, some of the most talented and charismatic people on the planet have, you know, 30, 40% haters. You know, it's like in the world we live in.
Or even more.
Even more. So yeah, we've been, you know, talking about, you can't be boring. Rule number one.
Yes.
You can't worry about offending someone unless you are clearly going out of bounds, which I don't know where the line is anymore. I think I used to say things that were more shocking 10 years ago than I do now. Now that people say things that are more shocking, it makes me put a mirror up to myself and say, is that who you want to be at this point? And the answer is no. Right. But that doesn't mean I don't want to be interesting. It doesn't mean that I don't want to share my pop culture obsession with my silly metaphors and stuff I do to make things more interesting. And some people don't like that. Like I make a reference to a Marvel movie and I'm like, someone hates Marvel movies. Okay. I can see that.
Like, I like it in your emails when you drop at the end of the emails, you drop like links to like, you know, 70s and 80s, songs, videos on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I tell Trudy that that's the only reason I do further is to do the flashback video. Yeah, you know, I just show up for that.
We do every Friday. We call it Dance Floor Friday in our private group. And we said, everybody, you know, hit us up with a link where we can boogie down a little bit. And by the end of the day, we've got like, you know, half a dozen cool videos. And sometimes we put them into a playlist and share them back and stuff like that. These are the things I think that are way more memorable than a lot of people think that.
Yeah. Way more. No, it's
and if
true.
Someone links to like an old Blondie track from like 81 or something, or references, you know, a movie like Goonies or something, like if you watch that film and you resonated with that as a kid, and now someone brings it up, like that pulls a memory string. Oh yeah, Brian gets me. Like, yeah, this is cool kind of thing, right? And I think that it's like anything else. Like, think about comedy, for example. Like Ricky Gervais is like the perfect example here. He talks about how a lot of people say that he's offensive and that there are certain things that you shouldn't joke about. And he says, well, actually, no. It's only offensive to you if you don't agree with it, if you don't like it. But then it comes down to personal opinion.
Right.
Just because you didn't find the joke funny doesn't mean that other people won't find the joke funny.
Yeah.
And that's why there's no limits to what I'll talk about. I'll make jokes about everything. And if you don't like it, then that's okay. That's your opinion. But, you know, I'm not going to stop doing what I do as a comedian kind of thing. I respect that. I might not. I might find some of his jokes offensive, but I respect his opinion. You know what I mean? I respect his opinion.
Yeah. Well, you respect his talent. I personally think he's hilarious and can do no wrong.
Think he's the best
even though
on,
I'm like
on the planet, yeah,
I'm like, yeah. You know, I love those kind of comedians who make you go, "Oh, you shouldn't have gone there," while you're laughing your head off.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
So before the youpreneur, digital business that you have now, you had some fairly, as you alluded to, labor-intensive ventures, including your virtual staffing business. And then there's another one that I'm not,
Call center.
Oh, the call center, that's right. So these are very real estate and labor intensive businesses, maybe not the VA stuff anymore, I don't know. What did you do before that? Did you ever have like a freelance phase or a client service phase before you kind of went into those labor-intensive businesses?
Yeah, I mean, the loose term would be a sales and marketing consultant for about, say, maybe 5 years on and off. But I mean, like 3 of those years, I was working exclusively with one particular infomercial business out of Miami in Florida. But even that kind of morphed. I'm really glad that it did morph because it opened up a lot of different tricks in the bag of Chris that I didn't know that were there. I signed on as a consultant to help them develop their international distribution chain for their product. We started with the, EMEA, so, Europe, Middle East, Africa, and then we went out to Asia, and then we were doing other areas. I think there was something in the North America was covered, but I think maybe we did Canada. I can't remember now, but bottom line is we kind of worked on that for about 18 months or so. And then I was in Miami for about a month. We were going to be shooting some new shows, some infomercials. And he was like, you know, we need help with putting together a voice over. Chris, have you ever done any voiceover work? And I'm like, no, never. You know, our guys let us down. Could you get into the studio? So then I'm in the studio like in the afternoon and I'm like, you know, but wait, there's more. If you call in the next 15, I was like, holy crap, I can do this. This is great. You know? So little things like that. And you know, that was interesting because that guy taught me a lot about business. He taught me how to not run a business. He taught me how to not treat people. He was a real a-hole to work for. Mm. Super nice dude away from business, like floor seats at the Heat games, VIP section at, you know, Prince's pre-Super Bowl show. Like, I was like, holy smokes, right?
Yeah.
So, right. You know, but a real a-hole at work. And I learned a lot about that. And the consulting side of things, I think, set me up perfectly to begin those brick and mortar type businesses. Call center at its peak had almost 450 staff. We currently have about 230 or so. And that's just been my decision to kind of size it down and keep it relatively small and easier to manage. You know, virtual staff finder continues to grow year on year after 10 years now. We've helped over 8,000 people find VAs over that time. And I've got a team of 12. With it, and they're all remote, and they're amazing. And then, obviously, with Youpreneur, the digital side of things, that's morphed, dude. It was very digital when we opened up the door, and now it's morphed into more and more of the kind of the coaching and the mentoring and stuff like that. Yeah. And if I'm to be honest, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be doing that for.
I don't know. It's kind of clear you don't have to, which is interesting. We're in the same boat. Different approaches, but I don't know. I'm just fascinated with finding out how people started because it invariably, you know, generally has to do with client services.
Yep.
You don't know what you're doing at the beginning, but by the end of it, you're a different person and you're ready to become the entrepreneur that people see today. And yet they just think you hatched out of the womb that way, right? And everyone I've talked to, it's really been the theme of the last 3 years in our approach to trying to help people is that, you know, you just don't jump to be Chris Ducker. You know, everyone I talked to, Nathan Berry, founder of ConvertKit, Laura Roeder, SaaS entrepreneur, they all started as freelancers, right? That's where you learn how to sink or swim, in my mind.
Yeah,
So I guess my question is, you've got people who want to become digital entrepreneurs and that they want to come right out of the job, right out of the gate and make a digital product and be a millionaire. And, you know, when I first started Copyblogger, I created a course, I became a millionaire. And at the time, I thought anyone could do that. I was discounting the 7 years where I learned content marketing, made it up. You know, because no one knew what that was at the time. Just figured out what worked and how to live, how to survive, basically. So when I was in that position, I knew things that I wouldn't have known if I had just quit a job. And I wouldn't even have been able to start Copyblogger if I just quitting a job. You know, it was a uniquely fortified concept based on how I'd spent my time.
Yeah.
Do you deal with people who are like right and maybe not anymore? I know you used to work with people who were a little fresher off the boat, if you will. Do you think someone can just jump out of a job and go straight into digital products and succeed? I mean, it's possible. Is it probable?
Succeed right out of the gate? Like no failures, probably not.
Yeah.
I think that you're gonna mess up in some way. You're gonna learn lessons in some capacity. You might lose a little bit of money. You're sure as heck gonna lose some time, which is almost worse to a certain degree than losing money. But I kind of feel like I honestly feel like the vast majority of people that want to start an online business particularly a digital business where they're, you know, creating content to sell, right? Or courses or, you know, that sort of type of thing. I think the vast majority of people that set out to do it fail. And I think 9 times out of 10, they fail because they give up too soon. It's the whole tipping point thing. You're right there, man. Just keep going. Just 90 more days. You're right there.
And is that because they did not anticipate what they did not know, you know? And I feel like, you know, for example, creating a course based on the methodology you use to serve clients, you co-created that with those clients because you dealt with real live people. And I think other people think you can just, through an act of creativity, come up with something that people are going to want to spend money on. I mean, there's so many more resources now.
But here's the thing. You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
Right? You don't know what you don't know. And when you learn it, whatever the it might be, more fool you if you carry on making that same mistake. Right? So I'm just a big believer of like consistency and momentum. Like, I think they're the two words that get thrown around more than anything else now. So, you know, take it as you will, but I feel like there's a lot to be said for consistently showing up and consistently keeping that momentum moving between project launches, between live events, between whatever it might be for you. And I mean, live events particularly, I think, you know, they were obviously hit really hard in that kind of 2 years of COVID. And I mean, I think I put on great events. I've had certainly many people tell me that I do, but I've decided that I'm done doing like large scale events now. I actually want to do more intimate, more impactful events. So I'd rather have 10 people together for 3 days than 350 people together for a weekend. And you know what? I'm going to charge those 10 people $5,000 each to be there and not $250 to be there. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because then you're getting the right type of people. You're going to vet them. You're going to get applications for those spots. And I think, you know, you grow up, man. You grow up, plain and simple. It doesn't mean that you have got to be like super serious all the time, but you grow up, you earn your stripes slowly but surely, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a good point to stop. I think the entire industry is growing up into more solid business fundamentals because I've been, you know, saying over and over again, I don't teach people what I did with Copyblogger because that environment does not exist anymore.
No, it does not.
The emerging web 2.0, the fledgling social media, SEO at that time. I spotted why that was an amazing opportunity, and that's about all the credit I get, okay? Then I just executed. But you need a different playbook now, and that's it. Those of us who are going to keep going, I've noticed more people like yourself, working with more seasoned, experienced people, next level type consulting, higher dollar. I still have this soft spot in my heart for not necessarily like I brought up the newbie thing before about people just trying to leave a job without ever paying their dues with some client services. I'm more interested in helping that person, that freelancer right now, who, like me, at the end of my 7-year run, said, I don't ever want to take clients again. Or maybe you just want to take fewer and better clients and you want to systematize and productize and all the good stuff, you know?
I think I still become extremely enthused by the idea of helping, quote unquote, beginners. I haven't turned my back on beginners. We have a suite of products and services that we offer under the Upino brand that will help you no matter where you're at. And as part of our qualification process, we'll figure out where you are at. And then when you give us the nod in the right way, whether it be clicking on something or putting your hand up or whatever it is, we'll then provide the solution that's right for you no matter where you're on the journey at, right?
Yeah.
And like, you know, Upreneur Academy is $495. And if it's somebody who wants to get started online and create something and start making money based off their expertise, that's our lowest end product, $495. Upreneur Incubator is our mid-tier product, $1,500, 12 months access. You get 4 quarterly intensives with myself and a guest, and then the rest of the time, it's run by my team. Or there's the Roundtable Mastermind, which is the high-end product. It's $2,500 a month, and it's a 12-month commitment, and there's an application process and interviews and all that stuff that goes along with that. And you know, the majority of the people who come into that are going to be doing, you know, 6 figures plus, and they're, you know, in a position where they want to scale quickly. They don't, they've already grown. Now they want to scale. Right. And, you know, there's a difference between growing a business and scaling the business. So, you know, between the three, we've got you, you know. And sometimes I dial right back and go back to basics on the podcast and even through, you know, speaking opportunities and things like that. And then others, I'll dive real deep and start talking about segmenting lists and, you know, scaling for higher end profits, et cetera, et cetera. And it really just depends on who I'm talking to and who I want to help at the time. But yep. I think you're right to your point. At this point in your career, you feel like you're being called to help one particular type of person. Man, you've earned your stripes. Go help those people. You know what I mean? And that doesn't mean that you're closing the door and helping people that are further along. God knows you could do it easily with your hands tied behind your back, you know, blindfolded. But if you don't want to do it at this point, then that's absolutely fine. You know?
Well, you've got the classic Ascension product model.
Yeah.
And you know,
and unemployable. It works.
Oh, absolutely. There's also a way to flip that upside down and do it the opposite way. If you happen to be in client services, we're talking about that in the next coming weeks. But yeah, I just, I need to cultivate our community. And that's what we've been doing over the couple of years to get those people to the next level. Or you have to flip your model and go after the more experienced people right out of the gate. And I dabbled with that idea. In fact, I think you and I talked about it.
I remember. Yeah.
But I think if I'm going to get up there to the mastermind level, I want to bring these people with me, right? Because that makes me feel like, okay, these people I know I've helped and will continue to help. And I can look at them and go, you started here and now you're here.
Right.
And, you know,
and to
again,
that point, to that point, about half of the people that are in my round table were part of the Upreneur Ascension model up to that point.
Right.
So I've seen them grow over 12, 18 months or so. About half of the people that are in my Roundtable Mastermind have come through the ranks. The other half have just found me at the right time.
Yeah.
They're in the right position, you know?
You've got that segmentation signals that tell you if someone is ready for something more.
Yes.
Sophisticated, then you've got that for them as well.
Yeah,
Chris,
yeah.
This has been, I hope people enjoyed this, because even though we just kind of got on here, you know, ragging on Disney Paris,
I just want to say, if there's anybody here tuning in from Disneyland Paris, I love you, Park. But your Spider-Man web-slinger ride was a joke, right? It weren't worth queuing up for 2.5 hours with my 13-year-old. And quite frankly, it was over in about, 6.5 minutes. It wasn't that impressive, I just want to say. And that's a Spidey fan talking as well, by the way.
So the writers in the audience will notice that was an open loop that Chris just closed at the end. We can now officially end the episode. Chris, tell people where they should go look for your stuff.
They should just follow me at Chris Ducker anywhere. And just go to chrisducker.com.
That's easy enough. I can do that. Mm. We'll put those in the show notes. Chris, my friend, stay out of the theme parks and stay out of the English rain. That's all I've got for you.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had any for bloody ages over here. We're in the
it's
middle of
It's been rough, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not going to complain too much. It'll change pretty soon.
Okay. Well, we wouldn't want to start complaining now.
No. No, that would not be a good idea for a podcast.
Take care, everyone.
We'll be right back.